Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I like to present what I feel is the leading edge in a spiritual revolution that's happening in this country. And tonight I have two very good friends, some great guests, some great communicators about this change, and they're going to be talking about the Vistar method of communication. They are Ron and Victoria Friedman, and I've gotten to know them pretty well over the last year, and I find their work as spiritual teachers and as a collective consciousness that they're trying to bring to the planet very valuable. So we'll be exploring those themes tonight, especially the importance of communication and a real effective method that people can use to hear each other and create change. So Ron, Victoria, are you there?
We're here.
Yes, we are. Thank you, Alan.
Hello, Alan.
It's nice to have you both here because we've been talking about doing this for a while, and now that I've hung around you, I really get your dedication, both of your dedication to this, what I call a spiritual revolution. So we can kind of give a little background. Victoria, I know you kind of came from a pretty mainstream, well, both of you from a pretty mainstream background, but then you had a sort of awakening. Can you just describe who you were and who you are now? I know that can take a lifetime, but do you want to start there, Victoria?
Yeah.
Is that too broad? Yeah. I mean, why don't you just start?
Alan, I'll try to get my whole life in 25 words or less. No, it's okay. First of all, I just want to say, Alan, I'm so glad we're doing this, and you have been so much a part of what we've done here, and I love the way we've worked together and the great times we've spent together in the collective, in the consciousness that we all share, and, you know, we bring that together when we're with you. So it's just been great to know you. I just want to say that first, and thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you indeed, Alan.
Yeah, I know, and I feel close to both of you, and I feel like we're all really trying to do the same thing in different ways, so I'm just happy that we can put this out to the world. So let's see what we can get out there, and you know what we've discovered for ourselves, and you know, it's all, we're building a collective each spot at a time, in a sense. Each person brings their own little brick to the collective house, and so
I think
definitely.
And what I wanted to start with you, Victoria, is because,
yeah.
I mean, what I know of Ron, he was kind of on a spiritual journey longer, in a sense. He was sort of out there, but you sort of came from a very mainstream background and had a sort of sudden awakening, and I think that's valuable for people to hear who you were, and then sort of almost overnight, what happened to you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I love to tell that story because it's great. It's great what happened, and that's completely true. Until the age of 35, I really felt that life was, it was a programming. Life was a programming that I had, and the program was very set. You know, marriage, two children. It just seemed to go on, you know.
But you didn't know it was a programming, right? I mean,
I was going with the program, actually. The program was going pretty well. You know, there was a Jewish doctor husband, and there was, a son and a daughter. There was a dog and a cat and a house and a Dodge Aspen station wagon with wood paneling. So,
you had it set.
That program was working.
That was it. That was the American dream. You had nothing else to do.
Exactly. Well, it was an American nightmare, kind of.
No.
Well, it was just said, and then something happened, and I think, you know, I would say that indirectly, the contact that we have with the Vistar method of communication started with this miraculous event, because it started with a huge breakdown in a structure called marriage. That's what happened. The structure of marriage. Speak of a breakdown in communication. That broke down, and
but wait, it was also perfect. It was also perfectly sounding, and then I mean, you know, I guess it was only on the surface that it looked perfect, you're saying?
Well, I think what it was is when you know, when the program was operating, the personality, let's call her Vicky, you know, Vicky,
yes,
at that time, she was in the program. And when the program crashed, which was based on marriage,
right,
when that program crashed, she no longer knew who she was. It's a sense that you don't know who you are anymore. I think for many people, I guess they just go on, I don't know, but for me, there was no sense of self. Everything was based on this program. So you might say that program crashed, and then there was a great deal of pain. I guess people call it bottoming out. Great,
yeah,
deal of pain, great deal of psychic pain, a pain of emptiness, is a sense of really, you know, on the border of a breakdown. That's the feeling of it. And just then, as they say, I didn't know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I
right.
mean, I really didn't know that. And there was suddenly right in front of me at that moment, at that particular time, a teacher named Charles Ahart,
uh-huh,
and his last name is A-H-A-R-T, and I always say that says it all. And his name was Charles Ahart. We called him Charlie. And he appeared, and, you know, overnight when I entered that teaching, it happened overnight that,
mm-hmm,
you know.
When it happened overnight, because you hit the bottom and suddenly you realized it was a programming. In a sense, you didn't know you were programmed until it crashed. I mean,
right,
the fish doesn't know it's in water,
exactly,
until the, you know.
Exactly.
The
it's almost when the program crashed, suddenly I became a seeker. The emptiness made me look for answers. It made me search for an answer someplace. And that's when everything was directed within, you know, the answer was directed, it's within you. And that teaching with Charlie was very much like that. And he was a very strong teacher, and we entered that, you know, that program. And that program had the Vistar method of communication in it. And it was very different than what we do. It had the seeds of what we do, but it's different because in the Charlie's program, it was a very teacher-centric group. It was an authority-centric group.
We'll get to what you do. I just wanted to hear Ron's version because, like, he was the other part there that, you know, that caused the program to collapse in a sense because I guess, Ron, you weren't satisfied with the supposedly perfect life either, but you were...
No, I was just...
Yeah.
I was the thorn in the side, Alan.
But you knew all along it wasn't...
The program.
How did you know all along? You were the doctor, you were the husband, you were making a lot of money, or whatever, but you knew all along it wasn't, you know, the ideal somehow. What was your sense?
Well, it just didn't make me happy. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, I mean, all through my life, I had many experiences in my teenage years and high school of being attracted, mm-hmm, to basically an understanding of spiritual work. I don't know where I got it from. Some people, of course, say it's from other lifetimes. Mm-hmm. But it was there. I mean, from the beginning, I understood the transformation of Raskolnikov and Crime and Punishment,
uh-huh,
you know, this Russian novel, this man who undergoes a complete transformation in Siberia. I understood that. I mean, I seem to have this background, and I didn't really appreciate it at the time. You could only appreciate these amazing experiences in retrospect, in a way.
Mm.
So it was always there. I was interested in the Zen and the tea ceremony and all of that. But like Victoria, at a certain point in my life, when I turned 40, that didn't seem to matter. My entire life reached the bottom through a relationship.
Uh-huh.
And so the failure, what I considered the failure of a marriage, which didn't supply to me what I needed, although I couldn't define exactly what it was. And then through a lot of suffering,
uh-huh,
it became very clear, you know, that there was this thing called the Gurdjieff work.
Right.
It called a magnetic center. A magnet was activated inside me, and
uh-huh,
it started looking for other people who were doing the kind of work that I was interested in. And that's
uh-huh
how it began. And then I joined the Gurdjieff group for a period of years, and then Victoria led the way to Charlie's group. She was ahead of me by 1 year, And she told me, come, crawl on your knees to this man. She was there. She was there first, and she saw the fact that somehow the Gurdjieff group, as much as I loved it, it didn't carry the grace, the healing that I needed.
Yes.
And so I went to Charlie's group, and that happened instantaneously.
Yeah, it's very mental, the Gurdjieff work, in some ways, it feels like. You know, I mean, I was never attracted to it. What?
Alan, I always say that, you know, Ron found the intellectual, and I was more the emotional center.
Right.
So I found that, you know, actually this man, Charlie, did use the Gurdjieff work, and it was extremely heart-based and beautifully emotional and very, very directly related to our everyday lives and, extremely. So I think, I don't know, that was our experience with it, not in the foundation, but with what he did.
Right, so that was like 20, go ahead, what were you saying?
I just want to say, I mean, the fact was, as much as I love the work, and we then used it a great deal over 10 years in Charlie's group, before coming to Charlie's group, it did not carry the help. It was, you know, it's as if something was saying, don't stop here. You have to go further to get to where you belong.
Right. Right. So you did...
Now, Alan, I think...
Yes.
I was going to say, Alan, I think that, you know, before having enough pain to have the program crash in me, before that, Ron was involved with the Gurdjieff work, and he had all these books around the house. I thought he was crazy.
You could
I
not connect
was,
at all.
I thought he was somebody. I used to tell my mother he has some very quirky interests. I thought there was something wrong with him. Like, you know, I thought it was some kind of bizarre, you know, very strange situation. Isn't like he had the book, the Tao Te Ching, on the table. And I would read it and I would say, what is this? Is he crazy? The name is a formless name. I thought he was, you know, I just couldn't imagine.
That illustrates a very important point, Victoria, that I think for me it seems like everyone is on a spiritual path and someday they find out that they are. And until they do, I think Jesus said, let those who have ears hear and let those who have eyes see, you know. It's like you can be exposed to the truth, but if you're not open to it, it'll just look like nonsense to whoever.
Exactly. I really appreciate that with people now. I know if you can't hear it, you can't hear it. And I was on the spiritual path. That was part of the spiritual path.
What, not knowing?
It was part of it that, yeah, the not knowing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Everybody seems to be on a spiritual path, whether they know it or not.
That's right.
I mean, it's just that those that then wake up to what they're really here to do, and those that stay asleep, and some people could live, you know, their whole life with that house in the country, with the two kids in the car, and the doctor, and thinking that that's the perfect life. And I'm sure there's people that do live that way until they realize that it's not. But, you know, that's not.
I would not say that life was, I don't even think that's a bad life. I think people can choose that life. I mean, it's a life to live. It wasn't that life was wrong. It was just for me, it was so programmed because I was just acting in a very mechanical way.
Right.
So there are people who are very conscious and decide they have marriages and two children and a beautiful house and I don't feel that that's the program. It's the way I was doing it. It was just completely, this is what you do. This is what you do when you're 20 and 22 and 24, and you have to have it. And it has to go that way. Nothing else is open.
Because that's who you thought you were. That was your identity.
Right.
And without that, you wouldn't know who you are.
I didn't, seriously.
Well, then let's get back then into, like, over the next, 20 or so years, you started to understand, both of you, this idea of collective consciousness working together as a group. You formed your own group called the Vistar Foundation, and you started to develop this method of communication from the work that you both did on yourselves and, you know, with the group. And Ron, talk a little bit about the evolution of how you started to understand a more direct means of communicating. That's a good way.
Well, what happened was we were very fortunate, Alan, that in Charlie's group, Charlie came from the 12-step tradition and AA. And people who have done any 12-step work know that the group, the work is done in small group settings across the world, whether it's applied to alcohol or drugs or shopping, anything. It's done in small groups. And we worked in Charlie's group in a group setting with certain basic rules, which we inherited. And in that group work, of course, certain things were possible that we saw immediately. For example, exchange of information by people was very rapid. But when we left Charlie's group, we came in contact with Dr. Kenneth Mills, who was a non-dualistic teacher, although I don't know if he would have classified himself in any way, who presented to us really what is very much in the current scene, the non-dual standpoint about presence, nowness, and identity. And we taught in that group. We taught the method that we had learned in Charlie's group, and we developed it. We taught it in Canada. We taught it in New York and in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And as a result of this, we began to realize the power of what we had been given in terms of the teaching that we could pass on.
Well, let's then go to the foundation of what it is that you actually were teaching. So let's, Victoria, if you want to just outline the principles of this. I think it's a very important way, and it's a new paradigm for communicating. So let's just let people in on what it is with the rules, I guess, or how else could you start it?
Well, before we go to the rules, I just want to say that the Vistar method of communication, let's say the VMC, has three opportunities in it. It's a group method. It's definitely done in a group setting. And in that setting, there is, first of all, a great possibility for personal growth or individual awakening. That's definitely something that is, we've been involved with, and we've seen that happen, and it's been an incredible evolving universe. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it's a way of working together. It's a way of working with others, and that is, it's a very highly creative way, but the most incredible part of it is that it's actually satisfying. Like, we really enjoy working with people, being together, when we can, you know, use the rules that we're going to talk about. These rules facilitate all this. They facilitate, first of all, that individual awakening, then that ability to work with others. And the third part of it, which is really the most important part, the part that we're really most, you know, engaged in, is that it reveals a field of unity. And in that field of unity is a very different relationship with everything. And the amount of creativity, infinite creativity, and the relationships of people and who they are, that oneness that people talk about, is really experienced. It's an actual reality. Mm. And it has kept a group of people here. We've worked with people for 14 years, and that group has stayed together.
In
14
in
years, 3 times a week.
And you've been fine-tuning this method for 14 years, right, Ron?
May I add to that, Alan? I
mean,
Yeah, I mean, this is very important. I mean, we speak of the work that we do, the VMC, the Vistar method of communication, as evolutionary.
Yes.
And the reason it's evolutionary is because it creates the individual and the group now focuses on the process of the meeting as much as the result. The process becomes crucial in terms of approaching this field of collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
The field of collective consciousness is something that is beyond the sum of the individuals in the group.
Uh-huh.
People are very interested in this field of collective consciousness now. You know, Lynn McTaggart and many others are investigating
the
global
brain, Peter Russell, all those people. Yeah.
Exactly, because it has qualities that are totally new. So when people are willing to go to a meeting and see a meeting not only is going for a particular result, but that the meeting itself is crucial as an evolutionary framework for a new relationship between human beings and an invisible field of reality. It's literally a partnership with the invisible that has altogether new properties.
Well, you make it sound incredibly exciting. I mean, you really do. The way
it is. It is. It's
but
amazing. The qualities of this field.
I just want to connect one point before we actually get to is the whole spiritual development we talked about just in the very beginning of the conversation. How does that connect to this method? Ron, do you want to just say, whoever, but you know, but, so I'm saying you had these spiritual awakenings and then you came upon this method, but I feel there's just a little step missing between the spiritual evolution, the personal, and getting to this point, or...
Absolutely. Victoria, you want to take that?
Yeah, it's really very simple, which is for me, that bottoming out, you might call it, led me in that moment to that group and that teaching and that program that Charles A. Hart ran. When we got to that program, we entered meetings. The meetings were going on there. There was no method. Nobody talked about a method. He was a teacher teaching self-realization, if he can teach self-realization. He was working with, self-knowledge and teaching teachers of self-knowledge. And there was a structure there, but it wasn't formal. They had no name for it. It was just something we entered into. It had been going on for a couple of years when we got there. So we entered into these meetings that were similar. Some of the basis of, definitely the basis of what we're doing started there. And we never concentrated on the method there. We didn't even know it was a method. We were just there learning with a teacher.
See? But you took all this knowledge and used your own creativity, develop your own extraction of this method from all these teachings and your own personal development. Is that?
Exactly. When we entered that teaching, we were asked, we had to take a vow that if we were given help, we would be willing to share it with others.
Okay.
And of course, that's the vow we've kept. And
right.
So this has been definitely, it is not the same as it was then, but that was the seeds of it. And that was 10 years, and then we spent 4 years in another teaching, as Ron said, where we actually taught the Vistra method, and then we decided to bring it to the public.
And you've been doing that for 14 years with your own group. Is that right?
Now this method has actually been developed, or I can't unfolded. This method has unfolded through the people here. It is not just through Ron and I, but through all the people that have been involved with it, and have inputted into it and have experienced it. It's unfolded through experience, and it's still changing.
Okay,
let me add to that.
Please.
Alan, you know, one of the qualities of the field when we work together this way is that it's evolutionary. That is, the field itself seems to guide the movement of the people in the field and the field itself. It's a constant, dynamic, moving process, which is changing.
Right.
The rules remain the same. But the field itself has amazing properties, and this is something we really want to stress. Maybe we'll get to this a little bit more later. But I should say it took us several years to realize the power of the method itself. And that's when we shifted our focus from self-realization to the method as a means to this field that would accelerate the realization of the individual and the group.
Well, no, I'm getting what you're saying is the field is constantly renewing itself because it's constantly the source, let's say. Creation itself is constantly making itself anew.
That's right.
So if you're at the edge of that, you will be made anew in each moment in order to live in the present. I mean, it seems like that's what
it really is. It's very powerful. And again, one has to wake up to realize what is happening in these kinds of meetings. And over 14 years, we began to realize that there are certain qualities of this way of working together when people are willing to follow the rules, which have to do very much, as you will hear, with creating a transpersonal setting at the meeting beyond the ego. And, of course, that is challenging to the ego. So this is spiritual work.
Right.
This is spiritual work in a meeting which allows this field to manifest.
It sounds really great, and so instead of just making a long, let's just get into it. Otherwise, it'll just seem like an infomercial so people then can dial. If you're really interested, call this other number. But let's just lay it out so people can have this to work with, and really, because it's, I think what you're bringing out will be available for everyone, and it's
yes.
it's something you sort of uncover that just needs to be put out there at this time in order to for people to communicate differently and more effectively and in a collective mind, which is where the planet is moving into. We're moving into a collective knowledge of each other.
Exactly.
So
yes.
Go ahead. Do you want to start, Victoria, or
do you want us to talk about the rules a little bit?
Yeah, well, so talk about the method itself. So the method has rules,
okay.
Right?
Well, there's the sticking point. The
okay.
method has rules. The rules are simple. They're not difficult rules. They're easy to implement. The rub with the rules is that the rules curtail the ego.
Okay.
They are rules that's what happens. The ego gets corralled. It doesn't get killed. It doesn't get destroyed. It just gets corralled. So for most people in the age that we're living with the ego the way we all have it, I know that the first reaction toward the rules will be one of a little bit of like agitation because
okay.
the ego will definitely feel it.
I just think we left out one important point that the reason people will be communicating or in a group setting would be for business for many different reasons, right? I mean,
yes.
this method.
Yes.
Just,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. This can, as we said, this can be used, you know, for groups that are dealing in spiritual awakening. It can be used for people in the creative arts, as we can talk about that later. We've used it, you know, with Voice Point, our theater ensemble. We all of a sudden began to use the same rules to produce. To do performances.
And we'll
be
presenting
back to the rules. Sorry, I just wanted to just help people why they would be communicating
rules,
this way. But yeah.
Yeah, the rules.
Okay.
The rules really do. Each of the rules has some curtails the ego a little bit. And if you look at them, I mean, we have given meetings that are 5 hours long on each rule. So you know,
well, we don't have to do that.
No.
Go over the rules.
Yeah.
And then after
yeah.
Victoria goes over the rules, then Ron, you can take the next level, what we do with the rules. So, okay?
Okay.
So go ahead.
Okay,
Victoria.
So if you've been to meetings,
yes.
you know that in meetings, you know, as I said, people call me up recently and said, you know, somebody, I'm giving a meeting and I have 12 egos. And so we decided there were 13 with the leader. So there's
right.
usually a group of egos that get together. So, one thing in the meeting, in a VMC meeting, the first rule is that you have to raise your hand to contribute.
Uh-huh.
You have to raise your hand in order to speak. Now, there is a leader in a VMC meeting. The leader is not the great authority. It's not the smartest person. It can be an authority. If we had Tiger Woods leading a meeting on golf, he would be an authority. But very often the leadership can change, but somebody is designated as a leader, and the leader
who designates the leader.
Me.
How does the leader get picked?
It depends on the organization. People call us up who managers who run a meeting, or somebody is head of a committee, or it depends on the situation. In a group as ours, and we have 13 trained teachers, so
uh-huh.
people take turns. It's rotation.
Uh-huh. Rotational, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
so
I mean, it depends
you have
on,
a leader, and then you
the
have
organization.
People raise their hand in order to say something.
Yeah, people have to raise their hand, and that right away does not feel very good. We do not. Most people like to speak whenever they want to speak,
that's,
and some people don't want to speak at all. So that it immediately makes the ego a little bit on guard, to say the least.
Right.
So raising your hand to contribute is there's a lot of in that in terms of. You know, in terms of the world, we have to contribute. We have to stretch forward our arms. So
right.
We have to raise our hand to contribute. We have to rule number two is to contribute to the leader on the thread. The thread is the topic. So you have to contribute to the leader, which means you don't speak to the whole group. You made your contribution on the topic we're staying on to the leader.
Okay,
and
so before you start the group, you have two things you need to do before you start a discussion is pick a leader and pick a topic. That comes before anything.
Well, Alan, actually, I'd have to back up. Before the meeting, there's prerequisites before every meeting, and there is a leader. There has to be an intention for the meeting, an intention, and somebody, either the leader has a thread or the group picks a thread, and there has to be agreement to follow the rules.
Right. Okay. Okay.
You know,
I got
so,
you.
So, I mean, there are, you know, it's a little more wide, you know, a little more to it. But I'm just trying to, I'm trying to condense it as best I can.
No, that's okay. But just
so,
give me a sample topic.
One,
a topic could be
one,
anything. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, it could be anything. Raise your hand to contribute to a leader. Contribute directly to the leader on the thread.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, again, people don't like to contribute to, egos don't like to contribute to a leader because they like to talk to everyone. Not everyone's like this, but a lot of people are. And certainly staying on one topic is an art. It's an art. And if you have gone in any conversation in any social setting, the reason we are all so unhappy and unconnected and feel so unfulfilled many times, not always, many times there's a feeling of not fulfillment after getting together with people, is because we jump from topic to topic. So we never go beyond a certain level of discussion on any one topic, and it's not about the topic. If you stay, if we stay on the thread toward, to a certain point, suddenly the emotional tenor of the entire thing changes. People start hearing each other in a new way, and new connections to be begin to be formed. There's a connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
So staying to the leader, staying on the thread is a great art, and people are asked to try to do that. And the,
I got
third, the third rule, the third rule is no questions.
No,
while the meeting is
if you raise your hand, you can't
you
can't ask a question. Now, that's, explain that a little more.
Okay.
You have to make a statement.
You make a statement on the thread. We're building up energy. We're building up. It's like putting a log on a fire. We are trying to build a fire. We're trying to reveal a field here. We're not. It's not an intellectual happening. It's rah-rah session.
So wait, let me just ask one question. I'm just saying, so the leader itself is not the authority. It gives power back to everyone in the group to contribute what they feel to be true. So it's not like...
The leader gives the meeting, if he's an authority, because he knows a lot, that would be wonderful, but that wouldn't make it much, I mean, that would be nice.
Uh-huh.
But the leader is not he's not an authoritarian position. It's not a teacher who's telling the group the answers.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron. Yes.
Yeah, the leader, the position of the leader in the meeting is evolutionary. That means that we start with a leader who carries out certain functions, like keeping the thread going, the central focus, and maintaining the rules, with a support position we haven't talked about yet.
Uh-huh.
But as the meeting goes on, as the frequency increases by this movement of group energy,
mm-hmm.
every person in the group becomes more and more subject to a new leadership. While they're following the rules, the leadership shifts from the visible to the invisible. That
what
is the field of collective consciousness.
But what do you mean by the invisible here? I'm just curious.
I mean by something that is felt. It's a wave, a movement of energy, which is recognized by each individual. The leader position is still there. But as the meeting gains frequency, as it moves up in energy, the individuals in the meeting become more and more synchronized. This is what we mean by collective consciousness.
This is
literally a different way of functioning. A new relationship between people opens up that is much more intuitive and instantaneous. That's the point of it.
Yeah, I was going to say before, instead of asking questions, if I didn't understand something that someone else said, I wouldn't ask a question about it. I would say, I feel this way about what was said. And so I'm adding to the movement instead of subtracting and pulling energy towards the individual. That's the sort of sense I get. The questions pull energy down as opposed to contribution, which builds it up. That makes sense?
The whole idea of questions, Alan, the whole idea of questioning, there's so much in this. What Ron said, that's that huge aspect of it. Another aspect of questions is that there is no one here. This is a, as we say, non-authoritarian leadership-centric group. So there's no one really to answer that question. So we have had over 20 years of experience. People come in with, we say, write down your questions sometimes. We say, write it down, and mm-hmm. guess what? That question is answered. There's a trust in what the method, what it's bringing forth. those questions are answered. Very often, people who ask questions, again, we're living in 2008. People, we're not living, we're not in an ashram with a guru. People who ask questions are very often disruptive. They want to take attention. They want everybody to listen to them. How many meetings have you been to where somebody asks a question and you're going, oh, my God, I hope they can get off it already?
So instead of asking questions, you offer people to make a contribution, which is what I get that
right.
you're saying.
People make a contribution.
Yeah.
And afterwards, people can ask questions. They never do because questions are usually answered. But it's the whole idea of where are we in our evolution about the whole idea of questioning and the mind that we have now. Are people really asking questions that they really want an answer to?
Right, so
everybody can answer that for themselves in the meetings that you go to.
So it seems like a pretty simple format. You have a leader, you raise your hand, and you don't ask questions.
One more thing. The four rules, and the fourth one is no crosstalk. And crosstalk is personalization. Like, we don't have the kind of tonality, the relative tonality that says, you know, Al, I really like what Alan said. Boy, Alan, I love what you said. And then somebody raises their hand and say, you know what, I don't agree with him.
Uh-huh.
That kind of crosstalk, that kind of name, back and forth, that is not something that we do. That tonality doesn't really sound like that when we are in the field of collective consciousness. People, you know, it's not that people don't have to agree on everything because it's not even about ideas, but that crosstalk and these side alliances that are made and people support each other against other people, I mean, it's definitely the Tower of Babel.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And I think that the rules have to be understood in the context of a group, a larger movement of group energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a circulation.
What do you mean
you
by
see?
A larger movement? Yeah.
In other words, it's a building up of energy that is actually transpersonal. The rules ask to put the ego aside. In other words, to contribute to the thread, contribute to what is going on, develop what is being said, focus the attention, focus your intention on the movement of the energy in the meeting itself.
Yeah.
That is a different priority. It's not just getting to an answer, but the priority is the movement of energy in the meeting itself. And that's why the rules exist. They exist not to disrupt the evolution of the energetic movement where every individual is contributing according to their essential nature beautifully, but this becomes combined in a larger movement which has new qualities. That's the point of it.
I get it. That is exciting. And then you actually feel something happening in the room. You feel something that's shifting because you're all kind of come together at the same frequency, at a higher frequency.
Exactly. It is a shift. It's actually a continuing upward shift of energies.
I get that. And is that it, or is there anything that happens? Is there another step to it? Or
I feel
you know, we human beings, we've been getting together, gathering together, you know, forever. We've been always having gatherings. You know,
that's human culture.
You know,
I mean, it's built on that for millions of years.
We gather together. Why? Like, lately I've been thinking how we gather together. We want, there's something that we know that can happen. That can happen when we're together. When we've gathered together to fight, we've gathered together to praise, we've gathered together, you know, to protest, we've gathered together
to make art, to build buildings. We've gathered together for all the great things in the culture and all the
and to destroy.
Yes,
and
exactly.
We've gathered together to destroy. But I mean, those are the content. But the actual, that's, you know, there's different causes to gather together. But the actual potential of that gathering. You know, and I've been thinking very much of that, the word unity. We all want to come in unity, and it comes from union.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, union, even the marriage ceremony says, you know, dearly beloved, we're gathered together. You know, and what that union eventually, you know, brings new life. And
well,
I think that's what we're meant to do in collective. We're meant to, like, birth new life together.
Well, I think you bring up a really important point for this spiritual revolution that we're in, is that we We have to let go of the ego in order to evolve collectively, but yet we're still so attached to who we think we are, which is what I think your whole spiritual breakthrough was about, Victoria, that, you know, in order to come to into this collective of contributing to the whole, the ego has to be put in place as raising the hand. So it seems like you...
I'm so glad, Alan, you're saying that. I'm really glad because, see, I feel that, you know, I can't, if a person has certain tendencies in their ego, you can't just stop them.
No.
What are you going to do? Go to a meeting and be different? No. So in our experience, and there are many ways to do this and many beautiful systems and many teachings, but in our experience, these rules really do, they take that edge off us in some way that is miraculous.
Well, that's the thing, you know, Alan. I mean, the field itself, when it's moving, when it's being revealed by this kind of an effort, the willingness to follow the rules, actually wants its own, it's hard to put into words, it wants its own propagation. It wants the realization of this invisible realm, of this very real presence by all of the members. And the strange thing is to do this while the ego is being put aside, individual talents and abilities are not being put aside. They are contributing to the movement of energy of the group. And at the end, everyone feels very fulfilled, which is absolutely a miracle when this is happening.
It's like you're a doctor, so it's like, you know, every cell in the body is working for the collective, not itself.
Exactly.
So it's so what you've uncovered or recovered is the movement of the collective consciousness, and it reminds
me
of that
conscious
of consciousness.
It's a conscious meeting, or it's a shift in the awareness about what a meeting is about. It's seen as an opportunity to develop a new relationship between individuals, the group, and form a partnership with this field. It actually works that way, and this field has certain qualities like letting people overcome personal differences. It seems neutralize.
It's even in a sense beyond that for me. It's you're taking the emphasis off the individual, the noun, and putting it on the verb and onto the beingness of it. It's like that book, that Kabbalistic book, God is a verb. God is not the noun,
yes.
the personal. It's the energy. It's the movement of things is existence.
And that's right.
And that's why the Native Americans would call themselves, you know, like by an action, because they would be hooked up into the movement of existence, not by the ego, stationary ego that was like kind of a rock in that's stuck in the flow of time. Everything was moving, and they would be moving with it, which is what I think you're discovering, the movement of who we really are, not the fixedness of it.
That's right.
So,
go ahead, Victoria.
Yeah. I was just going to say, and that the individual, each one of us that has experienced this, it's extremely, in a way, addictive. Like, I mean, you feel, you know, rather than being this separate individual who's always striving to be, like, the best in a group, all of a sudden, it just feels that one among many feels really unique. It's so unique, and each person is so different, and the flavor of each person is so wonderful, and the creativity, and the whole feel of this. I mean, when that happens or is revealed, there's just, I mean, as I say, we could go to the beach, we could write a sonata, or we could take a look at someone's divorce problems, and it doesn't matter, because it's all in that space where there's just, the resolution is there.
Wait, so let's look at this, I mean, try to expand upon this, because I think what you're saying is, even though it's not about the individual, each individual brings their own unique flavor to the collective and enriches it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, talk about that,
Wandy. It's not even like each individual brings their own unique flavor. It's just the whole sum is, it's like a stew.
Uh-huh.
And there's one taste, but it's made up of all those things.
You know, Alan, it's so interesting. I mean, collective consciousness is defined as a field which has qualities and properties and abilities beyond the sum of the individual participants.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it needs completely the unique contribution of each individual according to what they really, really are.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it demands it. Mm-hmm. This is our experience. It moves more and more towards the development of the individual as a contributor to this field. It's amazing.
Well, let's just now take this and move this out into the bigger world. I mean, if we could bring this to politicians or to government, how do you see this type of method?
Well, we're bringing it to the UN.
You are?
We are bringing it to the UN in May, so
and
bringing it out to the world.
We'll talk about how then, or Ron or Victoria, how you think this can work. You've been trained. You've been doing this for 14 years and longer with other people, but, I mean, if you bring this to an organization like the UN or some group within the UN, how do you think it can affect? Will everyone get it? I mean, have you done this with people who are just coming into it? Does it take time to really hook into the field? I mean, Ron, what do you say?
No, actually not. First of all, the experience of collective consciousness exists in many different settings. It's described. For example, in the area of basketball, there are times when suddenly a team functions all together as a different unity with different properties. They communicate and they perform at a very different level. They have fallen into this space of collective consciousness. So it can happen. I believe it can happen anywhere, but there is a willingness that is required. That is why we speak of prerequisites. There has to be an agreement before this meeting begins, or at the very beginning, of stating what the rules are and the willingness to at least try to follow the rules. Then there has to be a stated agreement about what is this meeting about and what is its larger significance. That is very, very important. The theme that people have come together and are willing to work not only for what they want, but for something larger than themselves. These seem to be requirements, prerequisites of this field of collective consciousness really manifesting itself. We have seen this over and over again.
What if this was brought into schools, and what if everyone learned this as a child and this became a sort of way of living on the planet?
We are using it with children.
We've
been doing it with children for 6 months now, and we call it the Very Magic Circle, the VMC.
Uh-huh.
And the amazing thing is when I started working with these children, were 6 and 7, when I started working with them with this method, it was so natural to them. It was so natural. They just completely fell into it. I mean, sometimes, you know, one child, there'll be 7 children raising their hand and screaming a little bit. You know, they have that energy. It's great. I wish we had adults doing that. You know, so they're doing it, but it's very natural to them. They love to listen to each other. They love to wait for that moment of agreement, not agreement, but a recognition, like that moment where everybody's united. They play like that. One child will say, there's always a leader. Some child will say, let's build a fort. 3 children will say, yes, yes, yes. They'll all raise their hand. They love when you come together like that. I just have found it almost like, it's almost like something we used to do that we have to go back to rather than having children. I think older children may have to learn it.
Mm.
But the children up to the age of 7, they seem to, almost like they're doing it. And I'm just there. When I brought it to them, they just jumped into it.
It's where we're from. We're from, I mean, on a soul level, we're from a non-ego collective consciousness. That's who we are. And we come down
exactly,
and individualize
yeah.
and pretend we're this ego or think that we are. And then you're both with the Vistar method of communication developing a new paradigm for collective evolution.
Conscious evolution for a meeting that has consciousness as its basis and actually evolves as the meeting goes on. It likes to express itself. The field likes to express its creativity. It likes to keep people together. It is amazing what it will do if people are willing, just willing, to enter into its realm. It's amazing.
But we don't just have to talk about this in terms of spiritual groups. You say this could be used in business in certain ways.
Yeah,
right?
Today we went to the Rotary Club.
Uh-huh.
And the Rotary Club is service above self, you know.
That's
a huge organization.
Uh-huh.
And they're very interested in getting together and hearing about the methods of communication and working in more synergistic ways. Of course they are. I think anybody who is in their right mind who listens really would say, why, of course you would want to do that. And I feel that it could benefit many mainstream businesses, definitely.
Yes.
So in a way, though, the method's not about the individual at all. I mean, if someone has a problem, this is not something they would do with the collective because it's about their individual thing. Or could you use it for...
No, that's not true. No, are you kidding?
Okay.
Absolutely not. I think, you know, I mean, it's like the true nature that we are. It includes everything. And in that field, that's the best time to take a look at individual issues. It's beautiful. That's the time when there's that separation, you know, from the ego's identification with the issue. When we enter that field, we can speak about anything that we're going through on a relative level.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron. You
anything can anything can be approached, Alan, and we have in our group journey for 14 years. You can imagine people have come with their individual problems and issues in life and relationships and finances, and to bring it into this format is to really take a different positioning to problems, to exchange information immediately, and to see it from a different place where you realize that these problems are prototypes. They're not unique to the individual. We share them, and then we can approach them in a different way. I mean, it's anything, and we have approached, this is one of the major areas that we have used this method, is in terms of going beyond individual issues. And a divorce, a relationship, men and women, we have a huge body of knowledge about male-female interactions and how to bring it into another realm. I mean, it's really, the method is applicable to any setting if the prerequisites are met, if there is a willingness to follow the rules and to work for something that's beyond one's own self-interest.
I mean, you wouldn't do a thread like, oh, I have a problem with my girlfriend thread for the whole group, would you? I mean, would you...
If we did that, it would be for everybody in the world.
Exactly.
It would be not just my thread. Go ahead.
We'll do a thread for you, Alan, like that.
You want to do a thread
for me? I'll show you how it works.
Well, is that how it works? So it's not just me and everybody else, then?
No, you could bring a problem, not a problem, you could bring a situation like that to a VMC meeting. And that meeting, as it changes octaves and, you know, depending on the willingness of everyone there, that situation could be seen in a very different light. And, and the kind of actions and solutions to whatever appears as a problem. Many times, actually, when we get there, there is no problem. The problem that we thought was there is not even a problem. Most of the time, there's a lot of laughter, and then sometimes there's something that needs to be done in a situation. But there's never once it's seen in that in a different light. It's hard to describe that. Very often, people will just say, "Oh, forget that," and didn't even know what I was talking about.
Really?
Just melt away.
If somebody's really upset about something, how does that change for somebody? What changes? In what way, Ron? Can you describe it?
Well, because you're seeing it from a whole different set of priorities. The priority is consciousness. It's awareness. And from that place, the approach to the problem changes. I mean, I'm sure you know. I mean, when you meditate, when you come out of a meditative state, the way you look at yourself, the way in which you feel yourself, the way in which you look in the world has changed. Because your level of consciousness, so to speak, has changed for the moment.
Right.
And this happens in the collective.
Uh-huh. And so the individual problems aren't actually individual also, because then everyone can relate to it, so it becomes a collective situation that then changes.
Exactly.
I get it.
That's right. So, that's right. And then it can be handled. But again, It's the movement of the energy field, the frequency, from which these are new places from which to approach old problems. You remember that statement, you cannot solve a problem from within the problem.
Right.
And so
right.
we need a higher vantage point of consciousness.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of this material, by the way, is being talked upon, talked right now, talked about by Oprah Winfrey and Eckhart Tolle, you know, on this huge enterprise.
Yeah,
you
no,
know about this,
I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but I like Eckhart Tolle, and he's
fabulous. It's been incredible.
Really have you been listening to that?
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Definitely. It's
wonderful, Alan.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Well, the thing I also want to talk to you about, it was something you mentioned, Ron, is when the frequency shifts, you know, and suddenly we become the collective consciousness, and there's a vibrational download of higher information. There's a new sense about oneself. Talk about what's happened, your experiences where there's something, it seems like magic almost, where the invisible becomes visible. Describe some of those experiences.
Well, it is magical. I mean, one of the experiences that's totally, you know, I'm speaking like a scientist, that's my training, that one of the experiences which everyone has over all these years is when you leave a meeting, you have been energized.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for people to go to sleep after a meeting.
Why? As a scientist, what has happened, actually, do you think? Just, like, take a scientific guess.
Well, I can give you a construct for it. It doesn't mean that it's correct.
No,
because
but
we bring it into the realm of the mind.
Yes,
the experience
that's
is actual. How we explain it is different. I would say that because the group frequency, the individuals, have aligned their intention,
mm-hmm.
attention and intention are force fields.
Mm-hmm.
And when you, through alignment and a shared willingness to do this, not just for yourself, but for, you could say, humanity in general, for unity, then the individual fields of individuals come together like a laser beam.
Uh-huh.
Light, as you know, has to be synchronized to form a laser.
Mm.
And the individual frequencies, like the spectrum of light, come together and they create a new conscious energy field which resonates with reality. That's the way, one way of seeing it. That's why I told you a long time ago that it could be seen as a sacred geometry. You could almost feel it and see it, that something is happening in this way. And so this is a new property. I would call it a new organ of human consciousness.
So do you think it's something that, I mean, it's just the time right now for this sort of thing to happen because we are... the vibration of the earth collectively is moving to this frequency. I mean, the show with Oprah Winfrey and Eckhart Tolle could not have happened 10 years ago, or you know,
exactly. Victoria, why don't you answer? Yeah,
5 years ago. So it seems like what you're bringing through, because it's not about you, as you've been saying, it's about something that wants to happen, and you've been aligned in the field. You've allowed the knowledge of the field to reveal itself in this way. It seems like it's just the right time for this. What do you say, Victoria?
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, well, it's been like that all along because, you know, when Ron and I first even started 14 years ago, all we planned to do was give a lecture.
Uh-huh.
We sat down to give a lecture because we made that vow that, you know, we would share with others what we found. So we gave a lecture. Actually, it was on the Gurdjieff work, a little bit of Ralph Steiner. We saw people. We would send people to these great teachings. We would be like a referral service.
A clearinghouse, yeah.
Yeah, we had no idea. This none idea. None. People. That's why when people say, "What, you know, what is your plan? What is your plan?" It really is funny. And so we had no idea what would happen, and people just stayed. And, you know, after 6 weeks, we said, how many people would like to continue? And all these hands went up, and people stayed. And, you know, hundreds of people have come and gone, but there's a core group of people here. As I said, we have people who are completely trained as teachers of this method and know it inside out. And so that is happening. We have no way of telling. We've been taken on a journey. We've spent 7 years doing creativity with this, the performances, and now it seems like everything is shifting to bring this method out, as you're saying. But
right.
It's certainly not anything that we are planning. It is unfolding.
Right. I think the creative process has been very rewarding for your group, it seems like.
Oh, yeah.
Very
magic.
Nice.
That's been beautiful. Beautiful. I know we didn't have a chance to talk about that, but...
Well, you could talk about it. We have a little bit more time. If you want to talk about using this process in creativity, it's the same thing. You start with a thread. You don't ask questions. You focus.
Same thing. Same rules, except there's an initiator, not a leader as much. There's not as much planning for the meeting, but it was just an inspiration to take the same method. We had a lot of people who are involved in theater, people who are creative musically, and we just said, let's see what we can do to, for example, you know, instead of getting somebody to write a piece of music or having an individual go and compose a piece, what would happen if we all got together and there was a piano and we just asked to see by people making contribution, raising their hands, to see what they hear and how they hear it actually sung. What is the melody, the tune, the music that's coming, that people are hearing? And we began to do that, and we've composed lots of music that way.
But it gets tricky, I think, in the creative process, because how do you know what's ego and then what's really coming through? I mean, is it just what rings true for everybody? Or, I mean,
that's exactly what happens. It's a test for the ego, because you may sing something and contribute something and it will go nowhere. In the resonance of the echo chamber,
exactly.
of that happening, it will just fall flat.
This is a brilliant idea, and it's like it just doesn't hit a chord with anyone, then it
hit a chord is right.
You know, Alan, I have to add here, Victoria mentioned echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
One of the properties of this field is that it functions like an echo chamber, and people are very much aware not only of the content of what somebody contributes, but it's of its quality, its tone. We are developing much more sensitivity to tone, which becomes even more important sometimes than the content. And so when a contribution is given, whether it's a melody line that's sung by somebody or something that's stated at a meeting, people can hear it. They're actually sensitive to its tonality and whether it's coming from the ego or from a different place.
Well, this is the work of some of the leading physics now that's saying the universe itself is a constant feedback loop. So, like an echo chamber, the universe is always putting out information and resonating with what it's put it out, just like individuals. And so we have to be aware of this feedback mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. It happens. It's a quality of working in this particular way. And it's amazing. And you can also hear it for yourself. Somebody doesn't have to correct you. But if you give out a contribution, you can hear a clunker. You can hear what is behind the contribution.
That's interesting. And if people drop in to a place, they will all get beyond the ego to the true source to make a true contribution. I mean,
well, that's we hopefully, and that is our experience, and this is why the rules exist. The rules are sort of a step-up transformer, if you will, to allow us approach the realization, the revealment of this field of collective consciousness.
So, I mean, it's all really very interesting and strange from an old paradigm, because we've been so taught that it's about ego existence, whoever has the most things wins, you know, and all that type of old world stuff. And you're saying, well, that was never a reality. The field itself thrives on individual expressions as it benefits the whole, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
But it's the whole. It's part of the whole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, as we kind of wrap it up a little bit here, it's like, the question that just comes to me is, do we then have to suffer? I mean, in the sense of ego suffering, it's like we started off the conversation talking about the shock of waking up and finding out, you know, that you thought what you thought was real wasn't or meaningful, and so you woke up to another level of reality, Victoria. So, I mean, there was some suffering on the ego part, and now if people, and I think this will be more and more accepted as a method of communication, do we have to suffer is the question on an ego level, or how do we get it without being attached to it? I mean, what's that jump that will break us through to the next level for those that are so stuck into holding on to it being their way? Do you know what I'm asking?
I really am not an expert in that. I just know what happened to me. For me, obviously that pain was necessary. For other people, it may not be. I don't really know. It sounds like a question you ask a guru.
No. Well, I'm asking you from your experience. Well,
to my experience, that was necessary then, and a lot of the, aha moments, as Eckhart Tolle's calling them, for me, a lot of realizations come at the expense of the ego. Like usually, if there's some kind of a diminishment, a loss of something, then for me, something that is real inside me surfaces. I haven't gotten a lot of that through success, like through inflation,
Right. So some people say enlightenment comes through heartbreak.
Can I also address this, Alan?
Yes, please. Yes,
Alan?
Yes, please, Ron. Go ahead. Yes.
What I would say is that, and again, this is our own experience, everyone who's involved in this, there's a joy in a shared creative process.
Uh-huh.
There's a joy. And what it does, it doesn't kill the ego. It redirects its energies into creative expression.
Mm-hmm.
When people feel this, they want more of it. It's
mm-hmm.
natural to us
mm-hmm.
to express ourselves
right.
creatively. Whatever the source is, whatever you call God, obviously there's a constant creative expression of the most beautiful kind going on. So when we experience this individually in a group setting, we want more of it. We love it. And we have seen this happening in our work, especially in the creative areas. So I think it answers itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What, do you have something else to say, Victoria?
I was just going to say that whatever suffering there is, it's momentary.
Right.
It's so momentary. It's not suffering. There's nothing really suffering about it. It's just a willingness. It's a willingness to take a chance, to try something different. There's an excitement about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. So, Ron, because you've been practiced in this, you're saying, even though I may not get what I want immediately, the joy of sharing the collective is much more satisfying than the individual sense of gratification. Would you say that?
The individual suffering, right.
If we
didn't have a natural desire to express ourselves and to create, we wouldn't have a chance. We wouldn't have a chance. We'd be stuck with our egoistic suffering forever. But the experience of reality, of our own true nature, which is innately creative and responsive,
uh-huh.
shifts our center of gravity, so to speak. And
right.
these kinds of settings of working together really approaches a very different sense of unity and satisfaction for every individual as mm-hmm. part of a group. That's the mystery and the magic of it.
Well, I think you hit on a really important point that, just resonates with me, is that the sense of wanting, this desire to create, actually doesn't come from the ego. It comes from the source moving through us in its own expression. And we
exactly.
just become,
yeah,
we become
definitely.
The vehicle
yeah.
for that expression.
Yeah.
That's very important.
So what
it's
you've
a
done
direct
with
experience.
The, yeah, and so what the Vistar method of communication seems to do is open up the playing field for the field itself to move and express itself to whoever's present as a collective, to speak to
That's
itself.
Very nicely stated.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Very nicely.
Yeah.
Very nicely
you.
Put.
Well, I'm really getting
it. It is a playing field. I love it. Yeah.
Level the playing field and just, but it seems like this could, if people really get the subtleties of what you're saying about this new way of communicating, it could be. It is revolutionary, and it could be revolutionary in major ways in educational institutions everywhere on the planet. So,
I think so. I think it has wide application, and of course, we'll see what they do with it at the United Nations.
Right, but you're writing a book about this, and
yes,
right?
We are.
And you're going to be lecturing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just tell people that we could they could find you at the VistarFoundation.org. Where else are you going to be, or how else can people find you?
We'll be definitely doing some introductions, and probably by May in New York City, we're planning those. So I think if they go on the website, there are other interviews, radio interviews, and also there's a preliminary summary on the website of these rules. And I think there's quite a bit of information on the website now, so I think that would be a good start.
The website is vistarfoundation.org. That's V-I-S-T-A-R Foundation, one word, .org. And our phone number is 203-968-1995.
Right. Before we close, just the arrogance I think people have saying, well, no one has to teach me how to communicate. You know, there might be some resistance to going and listening to this. How can you think you'll get people in, for people who really believe that they know already how to communicate? What will you tell them?
It's up to each individual. And I would say that the VMC is for someone who has a vision of the creative potential of any human gathering. Mm. And if this is something that resonates with them, they'll follow it up. And I think people have different experiences. And let's see what happens. I mean, we can only offer.
Every place that we have mentioned this, or any places that we brought it out, there's tremendous interest. Everybody knows that it's been really difficult. Difficult group gatherings, from spiritual groups to businesses to school boards. Oh, the Girl Scouts. The Girl Scouts are having a problem.
We're in trouble.
Girl Scout meeting, the Girl Scout leaders. Terrible. Terrible, situation there. So, I think that most people recognize that, and it's not that threatening. I think most people, we get calls, they're looking for some solutions, and I think once people, again, they understand why why these rules are here, and can see it for themselves. We understand how they feel, because we've been through it. I am working with a group of women. We're going to be trying this together and shared leadership. And they all understand that, I would much rather go to a meeting when somebody else is leading and raise my hand and contribute to them on a thread than be in a free fall. I call it a free fall. When everybody comes in and everybody's talking, and what happens is, the strongest ego takes over and everybody else can't wait to leave and they're on their BlackBerry and looking at their watch.
Right. We've been to meetings like that, I know.
Right.
Then there was a lot of resistance, I'm saying, to presenting this method to a meeting, because you have to hear the rules a couple of times. You have to actually witness the process. You have to maybe not a couple of times, but for me it's like, I'm really getting what you guys are doing now. It's like there is
good,
that excitement.
Good.
That's great.
Great.
That's great.
I can tell by your questions, really.
Right. So I'm getting it even more through this conversation, and also being a part of it. I see it's not no longer about me. It's about all of us and what we can contribute together. So it took me moving away from my individual ego needs to see the benefit of the collective, which is also me.
Yes, and yet the individual is fulfilled in this process. It really is a joint creation. Joint creativity, and that's so important. If we don't have the direct experience for ourselves as individuals, then this method does not communicate.
Mm. Well, you really are creating new realities, and that's why I call this program
New
Realities.
Why we love the name of your show.
That's right, because this is exactly what I'm looking for, people who are presenting new paradigms of thought, but you're doing one, that you're presenting new paradigms of what's beyond behind the thought, what's the movement of thought. And that really creates a whole new foundation. So
very exciting, Alan. Thank you.
Thank you. That's really
anything
great.
Else? Any final words you need to, that you feel
like
you have?
No, it's been great, great. That's why we love you, Alan.
We've had a chance to really talk to you and for you to feel it and to understand what we're getting at, because sometimes people do not. Do not understand the subtleties and the depths of four simple rules. So it's exciting to really bring them forward and have you resonate with them and really understand.
Very exciting.
It's really great.
Really great.
Yeah. well, good luck with, I mean, not just good luck. I mean, it's just saying I'm here to support this way of moving in the world in whatever way I can support it. So.
Okay, thank you, Ellen. You've been a support. Great.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I've been talking with Ron and Victoria Friedman, the founders of the Vistar Foundation, and now they have developed something called the Vistar Method of Communication, which is what this program's been about. And their website is vistarfoundation.org. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And if you have any questions, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, or you can check my website, which is a portal of holistic activities, newrealities.com, and also check the archives on bbsradio.com about this program and other programs in this series. I'm just going to end with part of what the Vistar Foundation has put together, one of their performances of Rumi, The Heart of Unity, and they actually use this method that they've just been talking about to put together performances and a whole show about Rumi, The Heart of Unity. So thank you for listening, and this is from Heart of Unity, A Mystical Journey, and this is I Am What I Am.
As a counselor, Don-